The zucchini that looked like the Hebrew letter Vav. He came to my office in the weeks before Rosh Hashanah. I hadn't seen the congregant in a while and had an intuition that something wasn't right. So I'd sent an email checking in. For some time, I didn't get a response. Then, as the month of Elul entered, he suddenly needed to connect. Things had been rough. He was underemployed and money was tight. Tight enough that most fresh vegetables had disappeared from his table. In his own words, when balancing his scarce resources, he couldn't even afford a zucchini. At this season, that's a pretty inexpensive vegetable. Home wasn't ideal either. He felt trapped, and as sometimes happens to people, he was wallowing in shame about his circumstances. And then the tears came, along with an explanation for his long absence. He didn't want people to see him in such dire straits. He didn't want pity. He didn't want to be seen as a failure. If I don't feel safe bringing my brokenness to my synagogue, what does that say? What are we here for if we can't be real here? What are we doing? And so I came to see you, so you could see me, so I could be seen. Although I've changed details to protect the congregant's privacy, I'm grateful for his permission to share this story. Ultimately, it's a story about all of us. It's about who Neve Shalom is and who we might yet be. It highlights a gap between who we are and who we still need to become. Why are you here on this holiest night of the year? Are you here from a sense of nostalgia? Do you remember attending with parents or grandparents? Are you here out of a sense of guilt or responsibility because this is what Jews do on Yom Kippur, or because you feel bad if you weren't here? Are you here because it's good to spend a day in self-reflection? Are you here to listen to the cantor? He's really quite good. But don't tell him I said so. Can't let him get a swelled head on a sacred day like this. Are you here because your friends are here? Because you like ritual? Are you seeking to connect with God on this day of forgiveness? Those are all good reasons to be here. Our synagogue should also be a safe place where we can be loved and seen. It should be a place where we can joyously engage in Jewish living for its own benefit and as an antidote to the anti-Semitism about which I spoke on Rosh Hashanah. There are three common names in Hebrew for a synagogue. It is a Beit Knesset, a place of gathering. It is a Beit Midrash, a place of learning. And it is a Beit Tefillah, a house of prayer. As important as all these functions are, this man's story reminded me that ultimately, it's not the adjectives that are essential, but the word that precedes them. A synagogue is supposed to be a bayit, a house, a home, the place we go when we're down on our luck or celebrating our successes. Many of us are feeling tremendously anxious about the state of the world and the state of the country. Maybe we have zucchinis on our table, but that doesn't mean we feel our lives to be any less precarious. If the synagogue isn't a place where we can bring our brokenness, our anxiety, as well as our hope and yearning, then what sort of home are we? We find the origins of the synagogue first in the Ohel Moed, the tent of meeting, and then in Solomon's temple. There's a key difference, though, between synagogues and those holy places. The Ohel Moed and the temple were commanded by God, God provided instructions both on how to build and where to build. And because God set those spaces apart, they contained an absolute kedusha, a divinely created holiness. The synagogue is not a place of divinely sanctioned kedusha. And for that reason, most of the laws and customs that were observed in the temple have no place in the synagogue. The physical space of the synagogue has no special sanctity. Rather, the synagogue depends on us to raise it up through the way we behave here and the nature of our relationships. The synagogue, in fact, is one of the most remarkable examples of a Kabbalistic concept known as Itaruta Dilatata, an awakening from below. The people of Israel spoke it into being so that we could continue to speak to God. It's profound. The synagogue became Jerusalem in exile, the home of the Jewish heart and soul. It's the ultimate expression of monotheism, that wherever we gather to turn our hearts toward heaven, there the divine presence can be found, for God is everywhere. This notion of a home for the Jewish heart and soul founds profound treatment in the wealth of interpretations given for a verse in Exodus, namely, Vasuli Mikdash V'Shachanti Bitocham. They shall make a sanctuary for me, and I will dwell in them. The way the verse reads in Hebrew, you'd expect it to say, they shall make me a sanctuary, and I shall dwell in it. But no. The Torah teaches us that when we make a sanctuary, God doesn't come to dwell in it, but to live within us. So what does that spiritual teaching mean in down-to-earth terms? Chazal, our sages of old, offer some answers. Always careful readers of the Torah, they notice that the most common letters in the Torah are the Yud, the Vav, and the He. Those three letters form God's most sacred name, the tetragrammaton, the Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, that we pronounce as Adonai. And if you have a bit of a good visual mind, you'll also notice that the letter that connects those two silent A's is the Vav. Of all the letters in the alphabet, the Vav is the connecting letter. On its own, it means and, A-N-D. It changes another function it has is it changes verbs from the past to the future and from the future to the past. And finally, Vav as a word means hook in Hebrew, like a fishing hook. Our sages noticed that the curtains in the original synagogue, the Ohel Moed, or Tent of Meeting, were all hung by their vavin, by their connecting hooks. Vav, in other words, is both a hook and a connector of the past to the future and the future to the past. Combining these insights, our sages understood that the synagogue is meant to be a place of connection, an institution that is larger than any one of us, precisely because it joins us together. It is this place that connects us to each other and to those who came before us. It joins us to those who are still to come and allows us to meet with our own souls. As a consequence, we also are able to connect to God and understand that we are in a sacred union with all of life. Home is supposed to be the foundational place where we learn these lessons of connection, where we learn self-esteem, where we can peer inward and feel secure at what we find. Not because we all aren't a bit of a mess inside at times, but because we understand that we can be accepted for that mess. There's a famous letter by the great scientist Albert Einstein. In it he wrote, "A human being is part of the whole, called by us universe, a part limited in space and time. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feelings, is something separate from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. The striving to free oneself from this delusion is the one issue of true religion." Not to nourish the delusion, but to try to overcome it, is the way to reach the attainable measure of peace of mind. The only way back home is to resist the splintering forces of entropy. It's to seek the vows which hold holy places like this together. It's why we focus on Teshuvah on this deeply potent evening, because fundamentally Teshuvah is the most powerful force in the world. It's what stitches together the tears and brokenness of our world and of our own souls. Teshuvah is the way we overcome the horrifying delusion that we are all alone. Every sin for which we must atone is an essence, an action we took that split us off from the whole. Every word of the Vidui, the confessional, points to the behaviors we engaged in which separated us from one another. Teshuvah, you see, is how we heal our country, one small person and one small community at a time. And yet, how well are we doing when a congregant has to hesitate before bringing the fullness of their humanity into this sanctuary? When he's ashamed to ask for material and spiritual assistance, when he doesn't feel worthy to be seen. What sort of home are we then? I want to be fair. One zucchini story does not adequately describe who we are and what we stand for at Neve Shalom. After all, this individual in the end did feel safe enough to bring their truest self into these doors. Additionally, I could tell you a dozen stories that paint a different, more appealing picture. How one congregant spiritually adopted one of our indigent members and became, in effect, their caseworker, their son, ensuring that the person got the medical treatment they needed. About the thousands of meals we prepare each year to feed the hungry. How we've hosted a couple of Alcoholics Anonymous meetings here for many years so that those who are suffering can find their own way to connect with something greater than their own illness. Many of you have similar stories as well. Some of you have nurtured deep and genuine friendships here, people with whom you can share the fullness of your soul. Neve Shalom is a place of connection. We are an oasis of peace, and we still have work to do. We still have work to do. Ultimately, what one zucchini story reminds me is that we can't fix America. We can't even fix Portland. Not completely. But we can ensure that Neve Shalom is a home for our souls. And maybe, just maybe, what we do here will ripple out and make our darkened world a bit brighter. What we can say with certainty is that we can make sure that we have a soul for our homes, by which I mean we must remember we are not our intellects or our careers or our personas. We are not polished social creatures. We are not any of the adjectives we use to describe ourselves to ourselves or others. No, we are souls striving, yearning, hungry, desperate, loving souls. Beyond our optical delusion of separateness, we are carriers of the divine spark, that infinitesimally small speck that reminds us we are not alone. We are vows of connection, and it is safe to embrace our souls without shame. When we are seen in this way, we are transformed in the deepest way possible. When we see others in this way, we give them a profound sense of affirmation. For every one of us is loved with an ahava rabbah, with a great and undying love. Why did you come here tonight? Would you feel comfortable bringing your depression into these walls, your rage or shame, your weakness, your greed and pettiness, your prejudices, the fullness of your being? Would you be willing to stare these down till you uncovered your deep need to belong and how that has sometimes led you to make bad choices to find the acceptance you need and which is your birthright? Do you believe you would be seen and accepted if you bring the most real parts of yourself here? I invite you to carry these questions with you over the next 25 hours and in the months to come. When we can all answer yes to each of those questions, we will have built a Bayit Ne'eman, a true home, a safe home, a faithful home. And isn't that the society that we all want? Somkal, an easy and a meaningful fast to us all. Shana Tovah.